Well, I've entitled what I want to talk about True Chivalry. I had to actually look up this morning whether it was the chivalric code or the chivalric code. I'm not going to say that anymore. I'm going to get into a muddle with that, aren't I? The chivalric code was an expected standards that the knights of the Middle Ages were sworn to uphold. So they were meant to uphold their duty to God and to the church to protect those less fortunate than them. Women and orphans in particular. And Ben has already talked about George Muller's orphans, so you could say in a sense that George Muller was fulfilling the chivalric code. Right, that's it. I'm not saying that one anymore. Leave that one. Well, this account is the account of a man who had a great deal of power and authority, showing his care and his love towards somebody who was much weaker and in great, great need. It's an account also of two people falling in love. And we can see that as the story goes on. That's the next two chapters. But it's much, much more than that. It's a picture of God drawing us, human beings, to himself. It's one of those pictures in the Old Testament, and this is so often the case in the Old Testament. And by the way, whenever you read the Old Testament, it's important that you should always be looking for evidence of Jesus there. And this passage in particular is just full of Jesus. And when you look at Boaz, it's this wonderful picture of Jesus. And as Boaz woos, I love that word, woos Ruth, so Jesus woos us. And that's what we're going to think about. So what I'm going to do is the first part of my message, we're just simply going to look at the narrative, look at the story, and we're going to just make sure that we understand it. And then the second part of my message, we're going to be applying it. So we're going to be thinking what it means to us. I need to remember to click the thing. So the first thing we're going to look at is Ruth. She is the widow with little hope. You remember, if you were here last week, Simon told us that Ruth came from Moab. It was a country that was often despised and looked down on by the Israelites. But she came there because her mother-in-law, Naomi, had gone there when there was a famine in Israel and there was food in Moab, and she went there with her two sons and her husband. Her husband died, and her two sons died, but not before they'd married. And so Ruth and her sister-in-law, Naomi, said to them, you need to go back now to Moab. I'm going back to Israel. You need to go back to Moab. You need to go back to your own people. You need to go back to your own family and so on. And there you'll be able to find a husband. But Ruth said, I want to stick with you. Which meant that when she got to Israel, she was in a very, very vulnerable position. They hadn't got a man to go out and care for them. And so they were in a very delicate position. And so she says to her mother-in-law, Naomi, is it okay if I go at harvest time and glean behind the harvesters? Now, provision had been put in place by God for such people. So God had told farmers that whenever they harvested, they were to leave little bits around the edges and they were to leave little bits around the place and so on, so that people who were precisely like Ruth could go along and gather food so that they would have something to live on. And that's exactly what Ruth did. She went and she was dependent on other people's kindnesses to survive. Second thing about Ruth is that She was a foreigner. I've already mentioned that. And she was a Moabite at that, who was often looked down on by the Israelites. She'd been married before, and she had no rights. No rights at all in this country. She was really what we call living by faith. She really didn't know where her next meal was going to come from. We also read that she was vulnerable. So in verse 9 we read, I have, or Boaz says to Ruth, I have warned the young men not to treat you roughly. So she was a vulnerable woman. She could easily have been taken advantage of, not only by the young men who were working for Boaz in the harvest fields, but by any young men. She was very vulnerable. But now here's the thing about Ruth that's really, really important. And it was the thing that changed everything. She had made a wise choice. So Boaz says to her, may the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. In chapter 1, last week, Simon reminded us that at one point in that journey where Naomi had said, you need to go back, and Ruth said, no, I'm going to stay with you. And she said, your God will be my God. Now, for this vulnerable, this woman who was dependent on other people's kindness, for her, that changed everything. Absolutely everything. She put herself under the protection of the God of Israel. And as we'll see, as we go through the account, we'll see how important, why that was so important. So that was Ruth. She was the widow with little hope. And then there's Boaz. Boaz was very much the man with options. He was a wealthy landowner. In verse 4, we read about him coming into the harvest field, and he greets the harvesters, and the harvesters greeting back. And clearly they show a lot of respect towards him. He was also aware of what was going on. He was aware of current affairs. So when he went and spoke to Ruth, and Ruth explained who she was and so on, he said, yes, I know. But I also know about everything you have done for your mother-in-law. Boaz had his finger on the pulse in the community. He was following what was going on. He was able to be aware. He judged, this is the other thing about him, he judged by character and wasn't affected by status. Now, a lot of landowners wouldn't have taken a second look at Ruth. She was a Moabite. She was a widow. And he wouldn't have taken any notice of her at all. But Boaz knew what Ruth had done. And so he judged not by status, but he judged by character. He was a man of honor. So in verse 8, he goes to Ruth and he says, my daughter. Now that suggests that he was also an older man than Ruth. But he was a man who other people held in high esteem. He was a man of honor. He was a relative, a family redeemer. Now I'm not going to say too much about that now, because in the next couple of chapters, whoever is taking those chapters will say a whole lot more about what it means to be a family redeemer. But that plays an enormous amount into this story. Suffice to say that Ruth had gone to precisely the right place, because this man was a relative and he was in a position where he really could help Ruth. He was generous. He ensured that Ruth was provided for far beyond what his responsibilities were before God. So he actually said to the harvesters, pick out a few bits and leave them lying about so that she's able to go and find enough. But then the final thing about this, Boaz was clearly smitten. He was taken by Ruth. He went over, and I'm guessing that Ruth was a looker. He took notice of her. And that, combined with the fact that actually Ruth was a really good person, meant that Boaz really was attracted by her. So that's Boaz. But then there's another character in all of this, and it is God, the unseen planner. Humanly speaking, Ruth was in a desperate position. She was a widow. She was vulnerable. She was dependent on other people's kindness. She was in a foreign land. She knew nobody apart from her mother-in-law. But one thing, as I've already said, changed all that. Ruth had decided to make Naomi, her mother-in-law's God, her God. She'd chosen to put herself under his protection. And so when we bear that in mind, as we read this account, we can begin to see that what appears to other people like just wonderful coincidences were far more than that. They were God's hand. God was planning, working things out for them. In fact, this passage, when you read it with the knowledge that Ruth had put herself under God's protection, is full of hope. Simon finished his message last week with the last verse of chapter 1, where it says, oh, I've gone into 1 Samuel, hang on a minute. Where's that? They arrived in Bethlehem in Bethlehem in late spring at the beginning of the barley harvest. Now, I'm a farmer, and I understand how exciting it is when now, this time of year, you begin to see the ears beginning to form, and you can see how long they are, and you break them off, and you see whether they're going to ripen right up to the end of them. And as time goes on, we're away on holiday now for a couple of weeks. When we come back, the first thing I'll do is to go around and look at the crops and just see how they're looking. And I look at the combine in the shed, and I'm looking forward to getting that out. And it's the most exciting time of the year. It's full of hope. And that verse is not an accident. In that chapter, people came to Naomi and said, hello, Naomi, how are you? And she said, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. Because it described that she was hopeless. Everything had gone wrong for her. And it just seemed in that chapter as though she'd really fallen on desperate times. But the end of that chapter, just that little verse, they came at a time of the year which is full of promise. And that speaks to us of what God was about to do. In chapter 2 then, when we read in verse 3, as it happened, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz. That is not a coincidence. It wasn't just simply lucky that she went along and found herself working in Boaz's field. God knew about Ruth and her need, and God ensured that that's exactly where she went. And as the story progresses, we'll see increasingly how God was working about his purposes, not just for Ruth's life while she lived on earth, but running forward right through into the situation we find ourselves in now. Because Ruth became a great, 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 however great, many greats it was, grandmother of Jesus. Quite remarkable. So the love story unfolding has far greater implications than anyone then could have imagined. So that's the narrative. That's the story. That's what happened. My friend, this story is just full of wonderful application. It's so rich. So that's what we're going to think about now. And the first thing is there's a verse in the New Testament in Romans 8:28, which is often quoted. And I just immediately thought about that verse. It says this, "And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose." You remember what I said about Ruth? Ruth had said to Naomi, "Your God will be my God." So Ruth had chosen to trust God. She'd chosen to put herself under his authority. And the moment Ruth chose to do that, she put herself into a safe place. Do you see? As soon as she did that, she chose to put herself into a safe place. Now, on the surface of it, when Ruth made that choice, nothing seemed to change. She continued that journey with Naomi away from all that she knew, all that was safe, all her relatives, all the hope of finding another husband and so on, to a land that she didn't know, where she would be dependent on others, full of uncertainty. But in reality, Ruth had put herself into the hands of a God who works out all things for the good of those that love him. My friend, whatever position you are in now, it may appear to you as though things are broken. Things are falling apart. But if, like Ruth, you have put yourself under God's authority, you have chosen to put your trust in him, God will work out everything for your good. Now, it's important to clarify what that everything is in Romans 8:28. It really is everything. Including our mistakes and our failures, as well as our successes. God, in everything, uses them to bring about his purposes. If you look back, if you look back at the choices that Naomi made, Ruth's mother-in-law, they were not good choices. She walked away from being under the protection of God into a country that didn't recognize God, and she allowed her sons to marry women who actually, according to God's instructions, they shouldn't have married, and she made big mistakes. But here's the product of one of those marriages coming back, Ruth, a foreigner. Somebody who would be despised by the Israelites. But God is using those circumstances to bring about his purposes. And as I said, as we go forward into this story, you will be amazed at just what God did through her. Quite remarkable. That's the first thing. It's a place of security. The second thing, and this is the thing about this story that really, really struck me. It is an invitation by Boaz to Ruth, but more importantly, by Jesus to us, that simply can't be turned down. Now, listen to these words. These words were said by Jesus to a bunch of and who were facing all kinds of pressures from religious leaders saying, this is what you've got to do. And they were just overwhelmed by so much pressure. And Jesus came to them and he said these words, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens. I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give is light. Those words are just astounding. Absolutely amazing. And in your digging deeper groups, I hope that you spend some time on Tuesday or Wednesday just looking at these amazing words, this amazing invitation from Jesus. And so you see why, when I read this account of Ruth, of Boaz and Ruth, Boaz was to Ruth what Jesus is to us. Boaz, the wealthy, powerful landowner who went to this weak, vulnerable person and in a sense wooed her, drew her to himself, is what Jesus wants to do to us. He loves us and he draws us to himself. Ruth found herself in Boaz's field, as I've already said, not by some wonderful coincidence, but because of God's planning. My friend, you are not here today by accident. You hear that? It's not just some coincidence that you're here today. It is part of God's amazing plan. And when we can begin to appreciate that, what wonderful security that gives us. In the knowledge of all of our weakness and failure and the muddles and the struggles of life and the constant attempt, pressure we put on ourselves at living this life that we simply can't live, how wonderful to know that when we, like Ruth, put ourselves under God's authority, God directs our affairs. That's the first thing. The second thing is, just as Ruth had no claim on Boaz, so she couldn't make any demands, as Boaz came along, Ruth couldn't say, "Poor, you're a big, wealthy landowner. You've got all this wealth. You've got all these crops. Come on, let me have a little bit of it." She couldn't do any of that. But neither do we have any claim on God's kingdom. We come as nobodies. We come as undeserving. We come, like Ruth, completely dependent. And yet Jesus says, "Come to me and I will give to you." That precious. I've just recently been reading in the Old Testament Daniel the prophet, and there's a point in Daniel's life where he has a vision of Jesus, and the vision of Jesus causes him to pass out. John in the New Testament in Revelation, the last book in the Bible, has a very similar vision of Jesus, and exactly the same thing happens to John. He falls down as though dead, and in both cases it takes the physical touch of Jesus to enable them to just simply stand up and stand in his presence, feebly, weakly. And yet that same Jesus who appeared to John and to Daniel and made them feel utterly weak and feeble and broken comes to us and says, "Come to me and I will give to you." How wonderful. That's what Boaz did to Ruth, and that's what Jesus does to us. The other thing is, Ruth had nothing to contribute. In that verse, in what Jesus said, He said, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens. What is your heavy burden today? We could think of a whole lot of things that we quite gladly bring to Jesus. But in this context, what Jesus has in mind more than anything else is our heavy burden of sin. It's what separates us from God. It's what spoils our relationship. It's what prevents us from enjoying God. And Jesus says, bring that to me. Bring that burden to me. And the way Jesus deals with that is his outstretched arms on the cross with the nails through his hands and through his feet, and he pays the price for our sin. And he's able to bring forgiveness. And so whilst Ruth had nothing to bring, neither do we have anything to bring but our sin and our weakness and our failure. And Jesus says, bring it to me. Bring it to me. Let me take it. Let me bear the burden of your sin. Truly remarkable. Another thing, Boaz loved Ruth in spite of the fact that she was a foreigner, a widow, poor, etc. Jesus loves us in spite of sin and failure. He loves us. In Romans 5, verse 8, let me read this to you. God shows his great love for us by sending Jesus to die for us. When? When we've reached a certain level? When we've been good enough? When we've shown that we deserve it? No. God showed his love to us in sending his son to die for us while we were still sinners. At our very lowest point, God showed love to us. And that's what Boaz did to Ruth. He was Ruth, full of weakness and failure and brokenness, and she couldn't do anything. She was a Moabite. She was undeserving, and yet Boaz says, God, I like you. I want to take care of you. Eventually, he said, I want you to be my wife. Jesus says that to us. You may feel this morning as though your sin is too great and that it separated you from this great and holy God, and how could he ever take any interest in you? But he does. He does. He reaches to us in our deepest need. And he offers to bring forgiveness. But then there's one more thing. Ruth found that Boaz supplied all her needs. She returned to Naomi with far more than Naomi ever expected. And she continued right through the barley harvest into the wheat harvest. And by the end of it, you can imagine their front room was full of all kinds of places where they put wheat and barley and supplies so that it would carry them through the winter. Jesus supplies all our needs and far, far more besides. If we take him up on his invitation and we go to him in all our weakness and failure and our sin, and we say, Jesus, take this burden from me. Take this burden of sin. Jesus does so. And what he gives to us, it's immeasurable. Paul in the New Testament, Philippians, said this: God will supply all your needs from his glorious riches, which he has given us in Christ Jesus. That's amazing. God will supply everything you need. As I get older and as I look at the stuff that I gathered around me over my life, that I built up, my pension and all these sort of things, they all just seem less and less important compared to what Jesus has given to me through his death and resurrection. And I increasingly look up and forward to what he's prepared for me in heaven. Where's your hope this morning? Where do you look? Jesus draws, he loves, he calls. This gracious, and he actually describes himself as gentle, as lowly, as in a sense he makes himself vulnerable so that he can win us for himself. Let me finish. I'm sure you've all had an invitation to maybe a wedding or something, and there's RSVP. And you've looked at that invitation and you thought, I really don't want to go to this one. It's one wedding too many this year, and they're hard work. And so you think, and eventually you put yourself, thank you so much for your kind invitation. I would love to come along, but unfortunately, we have something else prepared for that day. And that's the best you can do. What excuse will you give to Jesus today? Maybe you feel that other fields seem greener. You look at other demands on your life. You see maybe friends, relatives, the culture in which we live saying to you, this is what we can offer you. And you look at Jesus' offer and you think, no, I'm going to choose this. My friend, don't be deceived. What Jesus offers is a far, far greater value than anything you'll get in this life. Anything at all. Jesus offers us true life. It's possible to be in his field, like Ruth was in Boaz's field, and fail to hear his invitation because we perceive Jesus as being hard. We perceive his demands as being too great. We perceive his invitation as an invitation to give up our freedom and no longer enjoy life. That couldn't be further from the truth. Jesus comes to offer us true life, true freedom. So many remain in their need and misery because they refuse to simply find out. Maybe that's you here this morning. He said, I hear what you're saying. I hear what this man Jesus did. I hear all that. He was a good man. And there's a big part of me that wants to say yes, but I don't want to lose out. You will never lose out if you take Jesus up on his invitation. Maybe some people have told you he can't be trusted. That's a lie. Jesus can be completely trusted. Maybe you're afraid to go to him because you just see the rags you're wearing. You feel so dirty. You feel so unworthy. Jesus says, that's precisely how I want you to come. I want you to come in all your weakness and failure, all your, the horrible word, sin, which we all of us have in us. Jesus said, I want you to come as you are. Maybe the tears you have in your eyes, the heartache that life brings, the pain that you're going through are so great that you can't imagine one being so kind, so loving, so gracious, so generous. But that's exactly what he's like. My friend, as we draw this time to a close, think of Boaz in that barley field, seeing Ruth, going to this undeserving lady who was a Moabite, who was married before, who so much wasn't going for her. And yet Boaz went to her and wooed her. Jesus does that to us. He knows what you're like. He knows our hearts. Nothing can be hidden from him. He knows us better than we know ourselves. And yet he comes to us and wants to draw us. He wants to give us forgiveness, life, peace, freedom, an eternity that is secure. Put yourself under his authority. Put your trust in him and prove him to be completely faithful. Amen.